Hey, thanks for joining us for another episode of the Super Mercado Brothers Video Game Music Podcast.
How's it going, everyone? My name is Carl Brueggemann.
And I'm his brother, Will Brueggemann. Today on the show, we'll be taking a look at the music of Yoko Shimomura, perhaps game music's most elite female composer.
I think a lot of people equate her to the female Uematsu, which kind of makes a lot of sense. But nevertheless, Yoko Shimomura is an absolutely legendary composer and just such a huge force in video game music. So.
Right, and I mean, I think there's a lot of soundtracks here that you'll definitely recognize, and I think for most of you, you'll be surprised that the same composer worked on a lot of these games, because she is very diverse, but she has her very own unique compositional style.
I think one of the cool things about video game music in the context of music in general is that female composers really dominated for a lot of the kind of the early eras of video game music, which is kind of rare when you think about like classical music and other forms of music. It's usually male dominated. So it's always one thing that I think is cool about video game music. So it's nice that finally we're able to have a whole spotlight on probably the most famous and successful female video game composer. So today's going to be a lot of fun. So just a little bit of brief background on Yoko. She learned music at the age of 4 or 5. She started taking piano lessons, and she started to kind of, what she said is pretend to compose music, just to kind of randomly play around on the piano, and that eventually led to her, you know, coming up with songs. So she had a lot of natural gift for music, and she did attend a music college, and I think she started working at Capcom, I believe in 1988 or so, and she composed 17 soundtracks while at Capcom, and eventually she did leave Capcom for Square. And she was there for quite a long time, and then after that, she just became a freelance composer. So it's great. She was able to kind of dabble in a bunch of different series and genres and styles. And I think one of the unique things about Yoko, and I was talking about this with Will earlier, is that it's really rare that you get to see nowadays a composer that was around at the classic kind of like 16-bit era of video game music.
And she's still so prominent.
Yeah, because like you think about Koji Kondo, who just does like one or two tracks like every few years. But Yoko, she's still doing full like RPG soundtracks with like 70 tracks. Uh-huh. Like it's really impressive the amount of output that she has. So let's just get into it. What you heard opening was from Super Mario RPG for the Super Nintendo, and that track was called Where Am I Going? We're going to play some more tracks from that later on. Let's start things off with one of her first soundtracks. This was for the NES. It was a game called Mitsushima Shinji no Daikoshin. We're going to play track 3. Let's take a listen. Listening to track 3, composed by Yoko Shimomura from the game Mitsushima Shinji no Daikoshin. This is such a great track, and I think it's a really great early example of her natural gift for melody, and it's something that it doesn't sound incredibly unique as far as video game music goes, as far as like, you know, what the chords are and the written rhythmically, but she always just has such a natural gift for melody where it doesn't sound forced and it sounds so familiar to you, even if you've never heard it before.
That's a very good point. It does sound effortless. One thing that I really like about this track in particular is the way that she's using the hardware of the NES. She's really using that pulse channel in a creative way, those two channels, because you have the bass down very low by itself, but the two pulse channels are working at pretty low octaves for the NES, and they're doing very different things rhythmically, and she also varies it up a little bit. Sometimes it's like harmonies, and other times it's little like arpeggios, and you have call and response lines, and da-da-dun, da-da-dun. I mean, I think it's really, it makes it sound very full, but it's in a way that I don't hear a lot of other composers using the NES.
Yeah, there's a lot of really nice interaction. And that that interaction of instruments, you're right, it is something you hear more in the 16-bit era, so it's pretty impressive. I think this game came out in like 90, I believe, so it was a fairly late NES title.
Ah.
But yeah, that's a great track and a good start to today's episode. We're going to move on to a game called Final Fight, and this was a huge game. It was originally released for the arcade, and I believe in 1989. And Yoko Shimomura was kind of Capcom's, one of their biggest arcade composers. She composed a lot of absolutely classic arcade soundtracks. And this game, like many others, was ported to the Super Nintendo, and I think some other systems, a couple years after its initial release. We're going to play a track called Something Putrid in the Bay from the SNES version.
Listening to Something Putrid in the Bay from Final Fight, composed by Yoko Shimomura. I really like how that panning works back and forth. But one little fun fact about the history of Final Fight, it was originally titled and going to be released in the arcades as Street Fighter 89, a sort of successor to the original Street Fighter arcade game. But Capcom later changed the name because they thought it didn't have enough to do with Street Fighter.
Right.
But I think it's funny that Yoko Shimomura would go on to compose for Street Fighter 2, and this was initially planned as sort of the second Street Fighter game.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like I said, at the time, Yoko was kind of their go-to arcade composer. I think it's kind of interesting how you see at Capcom there's kind of composers that had a very specific role. And what's cool about Yoko Shimomura is she was great collaboratively. She worked on
right.
a lot of great collaborative soundtracks. And a lot of those we're not actually going to play today because mm-hmm. it's really hard to tell who composed which track. So it's very possible that if we played a track from some of those games, it may not even be her composition.
Yeah, I mean, we may do like a Capcom episode
Definitely.
Or like a Square episode in the future that mm-hmm. we can play some of those tracks.
Yeah, but one thing really cool about these early soundtracks, for me at least, I'm not as familiar with them, is it feels like I'm uncovering this lost Street Fighter II gem. Like, there's a lot of these soundtracks where it's so cool to hear that Yoko Shimomura style doing this kind of music, because she's able to do so many genres of music, and I think she has a very classical background and training, but when she taps into this kind of genre of early 90s kind of video game music, kind of that rocking ease type of a sound, there's something, I feel like she's almost able to do it better than anyone else, so it's always a lot of fun to hear that, and for me there's some of these early soundtracks that they sound so familiar even though I've never heard them before. So we're going to move on to a Game Boy title. This is called Gargoyle's Quest, and we're going to play a track called Brieger's Castle. Listening to Brieger's Castle from the Game Boy title Gargoyle's Quest, composed by Yoko Shimomura. And I think this game falls under the Ghosts and Goblins series. But yeah, a lot of very devious classical minor key pieces in this soundtrack. And this is one of the strongest pieces. This is such a great Game Boy track.
Yeah, I mean, I think my favorite part is the da 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 da. It's really beautiful, and it just it just sounds so familiar. I mean, I think we're saying that a lot on this episode, but she really has the ability with her melodic gift to create melodies that sound very familiar, and she's able to tap into different soundscapes from all eras of music history, and she sort of fits in there very comfortably.
Yeah, and one kind of fun thing is that on our handhelds episode, I think we got a comment on our blog from Roy De Janeiro saying that, oh, you should play some Gargoyle's Quest music. So this one goes out to you. We're going to move on to a soundtrack called The King of Dragons. And this is such a cool discovery for me. I believe this is another arcade game that was eventually ported to the Super Famicom. And this is one of those soundtracks where, again, it just feels like so classic in this era of 16-bit video game music. We're going to play a track called Treasure in an Old Castle. One of the recurring feelings that I get when I listen to Yoko Shimomura's music is this feeling of just this legendary adventure. There's a lot of emotion that is evoked from her music, and it's just so impressive to me on so many levels. It really succeeds in a lot of levels. This is The King of Dragons, Treasure in an Old Castle.
Yeah, another thing that I really notice about a lot of Yoko Shimomura's music, especially in the Street Fighter games, and this track in particular, is that some of the instruments will go from doing harmonies seamlessly into little counter melodies,
yeah,
and little sort of trills and arpeggios. And I think it's really nice because you can almost look at both of them as their own individual melody, and they both have their own sort of ups and downs and flows and balances. And what's nice is there are certain points in the track where they come together as sort of perfect melody and harmony, but they're very divergent a lot. And I think it's really nice if you listen to it closely, you can hear the different things that they're doing, but if you just listen to it and sort of like a big picture level, it just sounds very sort of full and expressive.
I think the ebbs and flows of all those lines and the relationship they have to each other is definitely owed to her classical training.
Right.
I think that's one of the things where she's able to just naturally compose a bunch of different lines that fit on top of each other really well. And the relationship to each other is so strong. It can be, like you said, it can start as a harmony and then all of a sudden go into a counter line, and then maybe that will turn into a melody and the other thing will turn into an arpeggiated color. It's just really impressive.
Yeah, I feel like she also has a knack for knowing when to use harmony and when not mm-hmm. to use harmony. It always feels like it's at the right time, and I feel like whenever she does use harmony, it adds something to the chord, whether it extends it or it makes the melody just seem a little bit more powerful.
Definitely. We're going to move on to Street Fighter II, arguably the most classic soundtrack that she composed. And this is kind of a cool story. Originally, Yoko was very hesitant to do Street Fighter II because she didn't like fighting games. She just was not a fan of that genre. So she was very hesitant to do the project. But after she did it, looking back, she realized that it was some of her best work that she had done up to that time. And she was really proud of it and really happy that she did it, obviously. And I think it's probably her most famous work. We're going to play a couple tracks. This is Ken's theme from Street Fighter II.
Thank you.
We're listening to Ken's theme from Street Fighter II, and this is the special championship edition for the Genesis. This soundtrack was composed by Yoko Shimomura, and Iso Abe composed a couple tracks for the soundtrack, most notably Sagat's theme, but this track was indeed composed by Yoko. Talk about a classic piece of video game music. Everything really came together. The stars kind of aligned for Yoko Shimomura in the soundtrack. I think the timing was right. I think she was in a really creative headspace. I think kind of her initial hesitation may have led her to try to make the music a little bit more powerful and just may have made her try a little bit more in the soundtrack. Who's to say, but it's possible.
Right. Well, I feel like one thing she's really trying to tap into is that sort of like very powerful sort of like 80s, 90s, like montage type of music, like something that you'd hear in like a Rocky movie, you know, like Eye of the Tiger or something. I think she's really trying to harness that type of emotion, both in the chords and the melodies. But just one thing to know about this soundtrack is we've played so much Street Fighter II on this podcast over the time that we've done it. And so we're just going to try to focus today on a couple of the ones that we haven't played before. Because, I mean, there's so much good music in the Street Fighter games. And we really want to give every single track, you know, a little time in the spotlight.
And there's so many different versions of Street Fighter II. The reason why we're playing the Genesis version is because so many other tracks in this section of our playlist today are Super Nintendo tracks. So we wanted to give a little bit of diversity. But yeah, this game originally came out for the arcades and was ported to the Super NES and the Genesis as well as other consoles.
Yeah. One thing that's cool about this soundtrack is, like Carl said, since it was for the arcade and it was ported so many different times, I mean, even on the Super Nintendo alone, it had something like 5 or 6 different editions. And on the Genesis, it also had a lot, too. So it's like there's no one definitive version of the music. Mm-hmm. There's so many different versions to choose from. And I think that's kind of cool that these melodies sort of lived on for, you know, years and years after the release of the first game.
Oh, definitely. And there's a lot of different people that were in charge of arranging it for whatever different version or console it was. But yeah, that is Ken's theme. And what's kind of cool is now we're going to move on to Ryu's theme. And Ken and Ryu are definitely kind of the main characters of this game and kind of the opposites and counterparts of each other. They both have the same moves and stuff. So it's kind of cool that we're playing Ken's and Ryu's theme. And this track kind of feels like the main theme of the game. I know when you get to fighting Ryu in the game, it definitely feels like it's, at least at that point, it's probably the most challenging. And you just know that there's something really important here. Just, I love the background, how you're on this ship. And I don't know, there's just something really kind of powerful about the scenery, and the music fits really well. So here is Ryu's theme. Theme from Street Fighter II, composed by Yoko Shimomura. One of my favorite compositional things about this piece is the harmonized lines that are going throughout the whole song. Rhythmically, they're very interesting. Harmonically, they're very interesting, and they're outlining the chords, sometimes very complex chord changes that are happening in the song, and it's one of the few chordal ideas that you're hearing, and it kind of kills two birds with one stone because it also just feels like a line, like just kind of like a nice rhythmic supporting line. It's just very effective. That's one of my favorite things about this piece.
Yeah, one thing that's cool about the Genesis version is unlike some of the other versions of this track, those lines that Carl was just referencing, those sort of rhythmic lines that are sort of outlining what's happening with the chords, are definitely much more prominent in the Genesis this version than in the other versions. I feel like he gets some of the more sustained aspects of this track and the melody more so in the other versions.
Yeah, definitely.
Of Street Fighter 2. And that's one nice thing about the Genesis version. And one cool thing, again, about all the soundtracks is you can listen to the same song in so many different versions. And for each soundtrack, it sounds very different and has different sort of instrumentation.
One thing I love about her work on Street Fighter 2, and really noticeable in Ryu and Ken's theme, is that she would take a melodic idea and she would expand on it in the second time it comes around. It would be altered and it would keep going almost where it feels almost like a solo, but it's a very melodic solo. And that happens in both of these tracks where you have an A section, you have a B section. When it comes back to the A, it's altered and it keeps going longer and longer. And it's really a long form. And a lot of times the fight would be over before the track ever loops, because a lot of these Street Fighter fights, it only lasts about a minute. And this loop, and as well as Ken's theme, is at least a minute long. So I think that was really a smart choice to make the loop long enough where a lot of people won't ever hear it come back.
Right. That's a very good observation.
We're going to move on to a game called Breath of Fire, which is a very popular game. And this soundtrack was composed by a bunch of different people. We have Bun Bun, Mine Fuji, Mary Yamaguchi, and Yoko Shimomura only composed one track.
Bun Bun's back.
Bun Bun is back. Yeah, so this was just composed of a bunch of different classic Capcom people. And yeah, like I said, Yoko only composed one track, and it's kind of cool. Looking on some forums and some kind of video game nerd sites, I was able to find which track Yoko composed, and it's pretty obvious when you listen to it. So this is Song and Dance from Breath of Fire. This is Song and Dance from Breath of Fire, composed by Yoko Shimomura. Yeah, it's really cool. There was a few soundtracks in this era where Yoko would just kind of come in, and I don't know if she was like the closer, but she would just compose one track. Another really cool notable example of that is Mega Man 5.
Oh, really?
She came in and she just composed one track, and I think it was the Dr. Wily stage. It's a very strong track, but it's just kind of cool how she was able to just come in and just do one track like
that.
Right. And this is a very much a departure from all the other music in this game. I think this is like the carnival theme in the game. A lot of the music sounds nothing like this, so it's kind of cool that she composed this track.
It's very busy and sort of exciting, this track, and it's really happy and sort of danceable. I really like it.
Yeah, definitely. We could have, if I knew about this, we could have played this on our celebration episode. Yeah. This would have been perfect. Yeah, this is a great song. Again, there's a lot of interaction going, and I think she wasn't trying to be as, like, I guess, catchy or melodic. I think it was just about how everything is interacting to make a really fun sound. It really kind of sounds like a parade, like a band you'd hear maybe, like, on a parade float or something. This whole soundtrack is really well done.
I like some of those triplet feels.
One of my favorite tracks we played early on our podcast was Alan and Searle Forever from Breath of Fire. It's a really pretty kind of piano ballad. We're going to move on to a game called Live a Live. Very awkward title. I think it's just a case of bad Japanese translation. This came out for the Super Famicom, and it was once again composed by Yoko Shimomura. We're going to play a track called Captain of the Shooting Stars. And something cool about this specific track is it's a sci-fi track. I think it takes place like on a spaceship in space. And what I like about it is that she's evoking an electronic sound by purposely using more kind of 8-bit sounds. So the lead and the drums and a lot of the instruments are a little bit more kind of NES sounding. So I think that's really cool that she was doing that on the Super Famicom. Here is Captain of the Shooting Stars. This is Captain of the Shooting Stars from Live Alive. And I really feel like as we go on through the chronology of Yoko's work, I feel like she's just getting better and better at mastering all the different parts and just making them come together so seamlessly and so tastefully. And this is another great example of her very specific use of harmony. She only uses it in certain sections, but oh man, it's just so powerful when it comes in and it goes away too.
Yeah, I feel like there's the big points where you get some of those harmonies. It's a very sort of open harmony, and it's very powerful and sends almost like a shiver down your back.
And she uses the harmonies on the most interesting chords
right
of the piece. Whenever she does those flat chords or anything that's a little bit more modulating or kind of, in general, evoking the sci-fi epic feel, that's when she uses harmonies. Yeah. And what it does is it just magnifies the power of those chords.
Yeah. One thing I love about that little arpeggiated line that she has going there is every single note is very relevant to what's happening in the chord, but it's not just duba 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 duba.
Exactly.
It's going duba 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 duba, and it's sort of like moving back and then forward, and then each time it goes up and down, it's doing something very different. Not just with the notes that she's using, but the sort of pattern of what notes in the chord are going where on that little arpeggio. And I think it's nice because when you hear it fast, it just sounds so seamless, but it's really helping to outline a very specific chord choice that Yoko Shimomura is like attempting in this track.
Well, it's really refreshing to hear that, because knowing just from me as a composer, like when I've composed those type of lines, it really takes a long time and you really do have to spend time on every single note.
Right.
And it's refreshing to hear that, because there are a lot of tracks where it's just kind of more by the numbers, blank arpeggios.
Yeah,
and
it's
it doesn't
like you just picked
sound
a note
like
and turned up the arpeggio.
Yeah. Yeah, like, and it doesn't sound this purposeful, and it's not as pleasing to listen to. And I think it's a very subtle thing that a lot of people wouldn't realize, that it's something that's really conscious and that maybe takes a little bit of time to do.
I really love the octaves that are happening here. And it's another use of, like, when she uses harmony, the harmony instrument switching to do those little trills and runs, and it's just, it's so full, it's very busy, and again, you can sort of hear her classical music influence.
I always love the tracks that try to sound 8-bit on the Super Nintendo. It always is a very unique sound.
You get this very interesting sound because you can sort of hear the smoothness of the way the Super Nintendo switches from pitch to pitch and some of the sliding. It almost sounds more like a Sega Genesis or something, but it's very unique.
And those hi-hat samples, kind of, I feel like that was the closest thing to the noise channel that you could get on the Super Nintendo. We're going to move on to a game called Front Mission, and I believe this game came out in 95. And what's interesting about this game is this is a Square game, so she's no longer at Capcom anymore. And I think she left for Square in about 93 or so. But this game, she was asked to compose this game, but she was already really busy with working on Super Mario RPG. And this game was also worked on by Noriko Mitsuda. And kind of a fun story. She was thinking of turning down the offer to compose this game because they wanted someone a little bit more veteran to help out Noriko. And she happened to run in just in the hallway to the president of Square. And just casually, he was just asking her, oh, yeah, you're doing Front Mission, right? And I guess she was too embarrassed to say no. So she had to work on Mario RPG and Front Mission at the same time. And what's kind of cool is the Front Mission soundtrack, all the kind of rousing, action-packed, like, important themes of the game were all Yoko's themes. And all of the more kind of subtle ambient, less melodic pieces were Noriko's. So it's very obvious to tell who did what track. We're going to play a track called Elegy. And this isn't a very rousing, action-packed song, but it's definitely very important. Let's take a listen. This is Elegy from Front Mission, composed by Yoko Shimomura. And it's really cool because this version of the soundtrack actually tells me which specific track was a Yoko track. So that was very helpful. But it's such an impressive piece for the Super Nintendo. Those piano samples really sound kind of legitimate. And not only do they have great piano samples, but they also have kind of nice delay. And when they play octaves, it's really impressive. Right. There's nice trills. It's just great.
Yeah. I mean, really, I feel like I would compare Yoko Shimomura more to almost like the female Yuzo Koshiro. Because
definitely,
I'm very much reminded of some of his qualities of having those sort of classical roots and
yes,
having those that musical training from a young age, but also being able to don those various caps.
Oh, yeah, so diverse.
To compose music that's very different from each other. I think the one difference is that I feel like Yuzo Koshiro has a little bit more of like an invisible stamp. Like I can never really tell his specific compositional style, where even on the various types of music that Yoko Shimomura does, I can always sort of hear her unique compositional flares. And
sure.
I actually prefer that. I really like hearing some of those.
I feel like in the PC-88 era, you can definitely hear that for Yuzo. But yeah, one thing about this piece, which is so great, is I love the ornamentations on the piano. And you can really tell like every single short note of an ornamentation. If it's like a three-note ornamentation,
right,
it's a separate sample. And you can kind of tell it's kind of harsh and it cuts off quickly. But in the course of the song, it's very impressive. And I think this is one of the most impressive piano pieces on the Super Nintendo. I think it would be cool to have an episode of all Super Nintendo piano pieces. Because I think there was a Breath of Fire track that we played that had a kind of a nice piano song. But some of them have pitch problems. So it's kind of, I wonder what the best piano, you know what another great piano track is Secret of the Forest.
Right, I was just going to say
that.
Yeah,
there's so many impressive ones. So that's great.
And I think some stuff from obviously Donkey Kong Country.
Definitely, like Aquatic. We're going to move on to Super Mario RPG. And this was such an important soundtrack for Yoko Shimomura. She said after in an interview that it was really a turning point for her career, and she was so proud of it. Up to that point, it was the best thing she'd ever done, according to her. And I think just as far as how many tracks she had to compose, the fact that she had to work with classic themes from Koji Kondo in the Mario series, as well as themes from Uematsu in the Final Fantasy series, and put them all together, as well as come up with so much original music that would fit in both worlds, I think it was really an impressive soundtrack, and for her it was just a really important turning point. So we're going to play a couple from this game. The first one is called The Road is Full of Dangers.
Listening to The Road is Full of Dangers from Super Mario RPG. One thing that I think is so interesting is I think in this soundtrack, Yoko Shimomura was really trying to go for some of the compositional staples that Koji Kondo put in the Super Mario music. And one thing that I'm noticing is we've talked a lot up to this point about how she was very sparse, how she would use harmonies. But one thing that's interesting about this track is there's almost consistent harmonies with the melody. And I think that's maybe one of the observations that she made about the Mario music. And that's one of the things that she really specifically tried to emulate in the soundtrack.
And I think that was one of the reasons why she considered at a turning point is because she was really going for a specific sound, and she was kind of using music as a foundation and to try to make something that
right,
would fit in that world.
And I think the thing is, this music really makes you feel more comfortable playing this type of game.
Sure.
Because I think the idea at first of making a Mario RPG game was probably a very strange and odd combination, but I think this music really puts you at home because you do get some of those Koji Kondo themes, but I think more importantly, all of the original music really sounds right at home in that same universe. verse.
She just did such a stellar job in the soundtrack, because not only are the Kondon Uematsu themes done so well, and there's so much kind of excitement and fun, at this time, there wasn't that many remixes of all those themes. Like, now it feels like every single game comes out, and you've heard so many remixes of, like, the Overworld theme. But at that time, it was a really fresh take on it.
Right.
And her original music is just so awesome, and it's very true to her compositional style, but it also fits in the world, and I think it's really one of the strongest parts of this game, and that's saying a lot because everything about the game is very well done.
Right.
It's probably my favorite RPG that I've ever played.
Yeah, I mean, I would probably have to agree with that. I think the other thing is the game in itself was very important because I feel like it sort of made some of the foundations for like Mario 64, Mario mm-hmm. Sunshine, Mario Galaxy, just the way in which that Mario is like a silent protagonist and the way he interacts with story elements, which before this point never existed in a Mario game. And now in a lot of the 3D games, even though they're still sort of like action platformers, you do get, you know, you talk to the Toads, and mm-hmm. everyone has a character. And I think before Mario RPG, none of the other playful sort of characters in the games really had any character at all.
Definitely. We're going to play another track from Mario RPG. This might be my personal favorite track in this whole game. It is very sad and beautiful, kind of haunting nocturne called Sad Song. And you can tell that she definitely had some great classical training. It reminds me a little bit of Chopin. This is Sad Song from Mario RPG. Sad Song from Super Mario RPG. Just an exquisite track. One of my favorite things about it is the very end of the phrase, how the notes climb and lead into the beginning of the loop again. It's very right. effortless and continuous. And what I love about it is din dun din din din. That same note is the last note in the first note.
Mm-hmm.
You really can't tell where it's starting and ending. You really have to think about, oh, what was the beginning of that again? It's just very effective as a piece of video game music, but also just as a piece of music.
Yeah.
And I know that Retro Remix Review did a take on this in one of their albums, obviously with a real pianist, and they were obviously moved by the music in this, and I was as well. It's incredibly well done.
Yeah, I mean, some of the intervals that she lands on are definitely very vintage, and it puts you in that exact mindset. And I think she's sort of capturing, like Carl mentioned, Chopin, but she's capturing that style like perfectly, mm-hmm. I feel like. And I think another thing is the sort of fidelity of the piano samples on the SNES are a little bit of more of a detuned sound because mm-hmm. I think it's just one sample and they're increasing or decreasing the pitch, so
right.
it's not completely precise. But I think that really works for something like this. It sounds like the piano itself is detuned, like the two or three strings.
You're
for
saying
each
it sounds like
pitch.
The piano itself is sad?
Yeah, it
is
sounds
it a
like
sad piano?
A sad piano.
That's funny. Yeah, so we're going to come back to Yoko doing Mario games later on, so that'll be fun. We're going to move on to the PS1, so we're leaving the 16-bit era, and we're going on to a game called Parasite Eve, and we played a track on this on our horror episode. This game was composed solely by Yoko Shimomura. We're going to play a really pretty piano piece called Someone Calls Me, Someone Looks For Me.
Thank you.
This is "Someone Calls Me, Someone Looks for Me." Yeah, it's a little bit unfortunate, that one vocal sample with too much vibrato used on different notes, and it kind of sounds a little bit out of tune. It just sounds a little bit awkward. I think in this time, composers were a little bit too slap-happy with using, kind of samples. But I think the notes would have worked if they were straight. I think one of the unfortunate things is the very first note, I believe, is like a 9 over a minor 1, and that's already a little bit dissonant, and when you have that really extreme vibrato, you can't really tell what the note is.
Yeah, it sounds so very sharp.
But the piece before that was so incredibly beautiful, so I guess maybe we can talk mostly about that. Really nice, authentic-sounding, for the time, piano sounds. What's always kind of nice is they add so much reverb to kind of mask the slightly fake quality of the piano, but it really is emotional, and it really sounds good for a horror game.
Right.
It really sounds like this huge open space.
Also, I don't know if it was a MIDI performance or not, but the way that all the attacks happen feel a little bit like sluggish, and it almost sounds like they're plucking down the keys, because it goes... Bring,
yes.
And you just sort of hear some of that tangible, like the weight of the actual keys being pressed down.
I wonder if it was purposeful, maybe not quite that level, but to have some of that vocal dissonance. It is scary. You know, we have to keep in mind it's a horror game. I'm wondering if that may have been slightly purposeful to have it kind of out of tune like that.
Right.
I mean, I think just listening to it as a piece of music, it's kind of hard to listen to, but it may have been very shocking in the game, and it may have been effective in the game.
I mean, if I recall, the other track that we played from this game had like a similar compositional mm-hmm. technique where it played something dissonant over something very pretty.
I think that was called like Listening to Something Awakens.
Right.
Like, I think it was kind of a bad translation. That was a great piece, too. There's a lot of really good piano pieces in this game. We're going to move on to Legend of Mana, and this was another huge game for Yoko, kind of a nice other turning point. This is a sequel to Secret of Mana, and this game came out for the PS1 as well. And it was a very impressive soundtrack, lots of tracks, kind of reminds me of Final Fantasy. This is kind of the vintage RPG side of Yoko Shimomura. I think a lot of people equate her to Uematsu because some of the soundtracks she worked on are similar to Final Fantasy in the sense of the type of emotions that the music is evoking. But personally, I probably like some of it even a little bit better. We're going to play a track called Earth Painting from Legend of Mana. This is Earth Painting from Legend of Mana, composed by Yoko Shimomura for the PS1. And this track is really impressive. It's actually in 6/8 for the entire piece, but she does a really good job of kind of keeping you on the edge of your seat and not really understanding where the beats come in, because there's a lot of the din 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 din, kind of the rhythms are always changing.
Right.
And it makes you feel like, oh, is it changing meter?
I think
is it
not? You could think of it in multiple different
yes.
ways. I mean, I personally like to think of it as it not being in 6/8, but being in 4/4 and switching to 2/4 for a short period of time.
Sure.
1/2/3/4, 1/2/1/2/3/4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because sometimes it doesn't feel consistent. Sometimes I feel like the start of the measure happens at a little bit different place. So I feel like there are some very interesting meter things going on here.
Definitely. And with the rhythm, she's able to create tension. So it's not necessarily with the notes and with the music. Harmonically, there's tension. There's a little bit. But for me, it's mostly actually the rhythms that are creating that tension. And that's kind of refreshing. I don't hear that quite as much. And I think this is a really effective piece for an RPG. I'm not sure if this was a battle or what is happening in the game, but there's a lot of emotion behind it. It would get me very much excited to play the game and kind of keep me on the edge of my seat. And in general, I just think as a piece of music, unlike some of the Final Fantasy, I can just listen to it and enjoy it separately from the game. Almost more so than maybe some of Uematsu's music, and that's not saying that it's better or worse, it's just kind of, I feel like Yoko Shimomura, I can listen to her music on its own, and I'm going to personally enjoy it
right.
more.
Well, I feel like one thing that's interesting, I feel like whenever Nobuo Uematsu uses meter changes, it's usually to sound a little bit more rubato, like he'll
yeah.
hold something for longer than you would expect, and then sort of start and stop with a little bit more free verse sort of feel.
Sure.
But with this, she's really sort of accenting that sort of unbalanced, unsure, like rhythmic nature, and you sort of feel like the floor's being pulled out under you, like frequently throughout the piece, and I think that's so impressive, especially for video game music. I don't think that's something you hear a lot.
One thing I kind of want to say about Shimomura is, if you remember in our Pirate episode, we played a track, it was called Pirate Jig, and it had just a very strong rhythm. In general, I would say that she may be one of the strongest video game composers rhythmically. Every single piece has a very strong sense of rhythm, and there's a lot of diversity in different rhythms, and she's able to evoke emotions strictly with her rhythms. And I really do think that she's probably one of the strongest rhythmic video game composers of all time. And a piece like this is kind of quintessential for her. There's a lot of pieces like this where really nice kind of march rhythms, but she kind of twists it. It's not boring. Like, she'll always alter it. She'll always change it. And it kind of tells a story, just the rhythms of themselves.
Right.
So it's very impressive to me.
Well, nice. Next up, we're moving on to our
track of the week. This is from Kingdom Hearts for the PS2. We're going to play the main theme, Dearly Beloved, definitely the most famous and well-loved track of this whole series, and really one of the most beautiful pieces that Yoko Shimomura has ever composed in her whole career.
Yeah, there's, again, a large use of delay and reverb, and it's just very contemplative, and I think something that's interesting, I think a lot of people that would play this game might just sort of label this track as, oh, it's just a little bit sort of ambient, and I know when I first heard it and I didn't know it was Yoko Shimomura, I immediately assumed that, oh, it's one of those, you know, RPG composers mm-hmm. that doesn't really have the training but is just trying to evoke that sort of slow emotional feel. But one thing that I think is so unique is, especially after listening to this episode, there's so much proof that she's a very intentional and smart composer in every
right.
single aspect of composition. And I think it's really important because when she does something subtle and slow and less melodic, it really feels powerful and it feels much more intentional.
Without further ado, here is Dearly Beloved from Kingdom Hearts. So beautiful. This is Dearly Beloved from Kingdom Hearts, composed by the legendary Yoko Shimomura. Such a beautiful use of delay. This is a very musical use of delay because it almost feels like it's part of the melody. Like, if I were to play this, I would play it like dun, 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 dun. It really adds, like I said, another level of rhythmic interest to this piece. So it's not just an idea of, oh yeah, I want to add delay because it'll be cool. Musically, it was a very smart choice. And it's so incredibly simple. It's just a really simple melody, but I know for a lot of people, this will just tug at their heartstrings, and it's an absolutely nostalgic classic piece for a lot of people.
Everything she's doing is so intentional, like how she's ascending with voicing that chord. It sort of gives you a little taste of what's in the chord as the melody sort of moves down with it. It's very brilliant, and it works so effectively, and you probably don't even notice everything that's going on there, because she makes it, again, sound so effortless, but the way that she's voicing those chords is just beautiful. And again, she goes, you heard there, she wasn't just ascending up, she would go do 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 do, and she sort of moves back and forth, kind of like in our arpeggio style. It's really interesting.
You're hearing now a reprise of this theme from, I believe, either Kingdom Hearts 1 or 2. So yeah, every game would definitely harken back to this classic theme. And sometimes it's an actual performance like what you're hearing right now. But yeah, you hear a lot of those kind of arpeggiated chords and kind of the lush, kind of really thick chords. You hear that in a lot of Japanese music, a lot of Japanese film music, a lot of Japanese kind of anime music, like maybe something like Hisayashi. You hear this type of chords a lot. And it really sounds authentic, and it really sounds melancholy. There's definitely a very strong sense of melancholy.
Yeah, I think with the type of extended chords that are used in a lot of that Japanese music, there's a lot of major sevenths, major ninths, and minor chords and stuff. And what's so interesting is it does sound melancholy, but one thing that I feel is so characteristic about this type of music and that this theme does perfectly is it has that repeated melodic line continued over different chords. Na, na,
na, na, na, and what it does is it extends certain chords.
Right.
Because like maybe the five of one chord becomes the nine or the seven of another chord.
Right.
And it's just really brilliant. The simplicity is what makes it so brilliant. So we're going to move on to a game called Heroes of Mana, which is another game in the Mana series. And this came out for the DS. We're going to play a track called Tense Movement. And man, it's so fun to hear a soundtrack so much later from Shimomura, but it feels like is Street Fighter 2 coming back? It's so much fun to listen to her music, because you get to hear these classic styles coming back again, and it's just so rewarding.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, that's what I love about so much handheld music. Like, you really get that with Game Boy Advance and DS, where I feel like a lot of composers sort of came back out of the woodwork and harkened back to the compositional styles that they had back in the 16-bit
Again, like
era.
Yuzo Koshiro, it's kind of like a mirror to his stuff he did in the DS. But again, when I hear Yoko Shimomura go for this type of a sound with these type of melodies and chords, I really feel like no one does it better. So here is Tense Movement from Heroes of Mana.
We're listening to Tense Movement from Heroes of Mana. One thing that I think is so interesting about this is I feel like in a lot of video game music, for historically, they weren't really able to do a lot of tempo changes. And one thing that I think is so interesting about this is there's a lot of those sort of retards.
Yeah.
And then it speeds up really quick and the tempo really changes and it feels very uneasy and exciting. And I think that's something that you don't hear a lot in video game music, strictly because historically it was technically not very possible to have, you know, subtle tempo changes.
And it's one of those other things where, again, it's a great example. Rhythmically, it's so interesting and it creates tension because of the rhythms because of the tempo. One of the reasons that those retards create tension is because there's so much rhythmic things happening before it. That's what makes it. If there was no drums or percussion, it wouldn't have as much tension. And that's is something that's so effective about this piece. But again, the way she uses harmony and her melodies, don't they really seem so effortless? Like they, it feels like I've already heard this song, even though I discovered it this week for the first time.
I guess another thing that I respect is even though she's classically trained, she's not afraid to use a little bit more like a layman's sort of voicings. And like the way that she voices these chords definitely don't have like proper classical voice leading.
Yeah.
But it's really effective.
Will was doing like air quotes there, everyone.
She's not afraid to, you know, use whatever sort of hat that she needs to and sort of fit into the shoes of whatever style of composer that the soundtrack requires. And I think that's really an amazing feat.
She's definitely a chameleon or a chameleoness. Is that the word I would say? We're going to move on to another Mario title, and it's really fun because there's a series Mario and Luigi, which is kind of the next step of the Mario RPG. I know you had Paper Mario, and Mario and Luigi really feels like kind of like the next step in that series, and it was really fun to have Yoko come back to the Mario world. And at this point, I think she was like a freelance composer, so she's able to compose Kingdom Hearts. She's also able to compose Mario and Luigi, and it's just a lot of fun.
Great.
We're going to play a track from Mario and Luigi Bowser's Inside Story. This is a track called Grassland All the Way. That is amazing. That is Grasslands All the Way from Mario and Luigi Bowser's Inside Story. What's so great about the A section is that very quick borrowed chord, which completely spices everything up. But what I love is that the B section, which this more metallic percussion instrument, it feels like I'm back in Street Fighter again. It's like, am I fighting Guile or am I fighting Bowser? And it's just such a cool combination to hear. In one piece, you get to hear all of her different sides. And it's just, oh my gosh, I can't
say enough.
I really
feel like she's trying to hearken to the Koji Kondo style of composition with some of those borrowed chords and just the unapologetic use of harmony in that A section. Again, it's showing that she's willing to break away from any of her traditions, and I think that's something like really effective composers don't just bring their baggage along with the ride, and they sort of will do what's ever most effective for the piece. And I feel like what's so cool is immediately she starts off doing something that's so uncharacteristic of her work, having that very unapologetic parallel harmony. And that's just another example of, like, she's not afraid to, like, ignore her classical training a little bit.
When she needs to, yeah. And this piece is just, I just love how contrasting the sections are, and they're both doing something very effective. If the whole piece was kind of, you know how that B section is a little bit different, if the whole piece was like that, it wouldn't be quite as effective. You need the A section. This perfect marriage of the A and B. This soundtrack is absolutely excellent, this Bowser's Inside Story. This was, I think, the third game in this series. I believe the first one came out for the GBA, and then the second and third were for the DS.
Yeah, I only played that first one, and I got pretty far in it. It was very fun.
Definitely reminded me of Mario RPG.
It also reminded me a lot of Zelda.
That makes a lot of sense. We're going to move on to the last track we're going to talk about today. This is another DS game. It's called Radiant Historia. We're going to play a really pretty orchestral piece called Forever Proud. listening to Forever Proud from Radiant Historia, composed by Yoko Shimomura. Well, that was the last track we're going to play today. This was just such a great opportunity to get to feature the music of Shimomura. I really think it's so rare and refreshing and exciting to have a composer that is still active today and still cranking out full soundtracks of a really high quality that was also this classic Capcom 16-bit composer.
Yeah, I mean, she's really one of the last remaining gems from that old era. I mean, I think what's funny is, especially in video game music nowadays, you look at somebody like Grant Kirkhope, who really started around the inception of the Nintendo 64, and he's sort of looked at and held up to the standard of like this idol, this survivor from a different generation. But someone like Yoko Shimomura, I mean, she's been there since like the days of the NES.
And she's really never stopped. I mean, she hasn't had these long breaks where she hasn't composed anything.
Yeah.
She's always had work, and there's so many soundtracks we haven't played today because, like I said, they were collaborative.
Right, and I think she's just going to continue finding work because it's so apparent to me, at least, that she really can sort of fit into whatever scenario the game designers or the game requires for that specific soundtrack. You know, she uses so many different techniques from the entire vast history of music, and I think she's really able to channel all these different sounds and all these different inspirations into a lot of different varying soundtracks and different compositional styles.
And her own style always comes through. It always shines through somehow. I don't know how she pulls that off.
I feel like she has such a great work ethic, and her music has such soul to it.
I really do think you could say that she was the female Yuzo Koshiro. And actually, the more I think about it, I think you should probably say that Yuzo Koshiro is the male Yoko Shimomura.
Right.
In a lot of ways. So yeah, absolutely just phenomenal composer. This was a lot of fun to feature her music. Another idea I had for this podcast is to have an episode maybe called Girl Power, where maybe we only play tracks from classic female composers.
That would be fun.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be a lot of fun.
So much great music
to choose
from. I know.
Definitely, it wouldn't be slim pickings at all.
I think another idea is we should also do collaborations. We should do music from varying soundtracks or sound teams, and then we can also maybe do like a Capcom episode, a Square episode.
Man, so many fun things we could do in the future. Thanks so much for joining us, guys. This is a really fun episode. We have some great ones coming up in the coming weeks, so definitely keep it here. We're going to play you out with a track from Kingdom Hearts 3D Dream Drop Distance, and that came out for the 3DS. It's a track called The Next Awakening, and I believe it is an orchestral medley of music from that game. So yeah, thanks so much. My name is Carl Brueggemann.
And I'm Will Brueggemann. Thanks a lot for listening, you guys. Have a great week.
Peace out.